Marshall burst through the doors of the hospital and got to the emergency room in an instant. He heard a cry of pain from Bernice just as he got there and couldn't believe what he saw. Her attacker had been merciless. "Who did this to you?" Bernice whispered something. He leaned closer, and she whispered it again. "Was Strawn's house nice and neat?" "Strawn's place was a mess. He and Doris were gone. I've no idea where they are."
"Which place was the same way? And there was a threat spray painted on the wall. He's gone, too. I didn't find him."
"I'm a suspect in Ted Harmel's death. They found out I was there this morning. They arrested me at Strawn's place. I'm free right now on personal recognizance, thanks to a good word from our old buddy, Alf Brummel."
"Now he owns you."
"Exactly."
"Marshall, Susan Jacobson was right. Our phone must be bugged. Remember? You called me at the Clarion and told me you'd been at Ted's and where you were going next."
Yeah, I figured that. But that means the Windsor cops would have to be in on it, too. They knew right where and when to find me at Strawn's."
"Brummel and Detective Nelson up in Windsor are old friends, Marshall."
"They must have ears everywhere."
"They knew I'd be at Weed's alone. And when?" "Carmen knew it, too."
"Carmen knows a lot of things."
"We've been hit, Marshall. They're trying to get a message to us."
"Brummel wants to meet with me at 3. He said he wants to talk the whole thing over. Wait till I get my hands on him." Marshall was seeing red when he burst into the room, ready to wring the first neck he could get his hands around. There were many necks to choose from. Brummel had friends with him, all seated around the conference table. Oliver Young, Judge Baker, County Comptroller Irving Pierce, Detective Nelson from Windsor. "Alf, is this the meeting you and I were going to have?"
"Yes. Have a seat."
"Not while I'm outnumbered." Oliver Young piped in,
"Marshal, I can assure you that this will be a civil and cordial meeting."
"So which one of you beat the daylights out of my reporter?"
Brummel responded, "Marshal, these things happen to people who aren't careful."
Marshall smeared some descriptions on Brummel like icing from a sewer trap and then announced, "The party's over, guys. I'm going to press with every one of you."
Oliver Young raised his hands for Marshall's attention.
"Marshal, all I can say is be sure of your facts."
"Hey, I have records, proof, testimony, everything I need to put all of you away."
Brummel replied, "You have no proof, Marshal. You have no records."
"You ought to see what I have,"
Young said simply. "We have seen it. All of it. We've been following you from the beginning. We know you talked to Ted Harmel and hundreds of other quacks, malcontents, and doomsayers. We know you've been harassing our people and their businesses and snooping in all our personal records. That's all going to stop now, Marshal."
"Oh, so what's in store for me, Young? How about it, Brummel? Got a nice morals wrap to hang on me? You gonna send someone to tear up my house, too?"
Young sighed. "You have so far to go, Marshal. So very far to go."
"You plan to take over the town, don't you? Buy out the college. Make it some kind of hive for your mind-blown cosmic society."
"It's for the best, Marshal. It has to be this way."
Marshal headed for the door. "I'll see you in a paper."
"You have no paper, Marshal."
On that cue, Ned Wesley, the president of the Independent Bank, opened a file folder containing the records of Marshall's business loan on the Clarion.
"Marshall, you've been delinquent in your payments for 8 months now, and we've received no response from our many inquiries. We have no choice but to foreclose."
Marshall was ready to make Wesley eat his phony records, but didn't have time before Jimmy Claiborne from Commercial Printers put in his 2 cents.
"Marshall, we've been having some trouble with you, too. My records here show we haven't been paid for the last 6 runs of the Clarion. There's no way we can keep printing the paper until these accounts are cleared up."
Detective Nelson added,
"These are very serious matters, Marshall, and since we consider you a suspect in Ted Harmel's murder, these things do not put you in a very good light."
"As for the courts," said Judge Baker, "whatever decisions we ultimately render will depend, I suppose, on your behavior from now on."
especially in light of the complaints of sexual misconduct we've just received," added Brummel. "Your daughter must be a very frightened girl to have remained silent for so long." Marshall felt like bullets were ripping into him. He could feel himself dying. He was sure of it. At that moment, Sandy Hogan was in a deep trance in Julian Langstrat's apartment. In an altered state of consciousness, Sandy encountered what looked like a beautiful young lady, Madeline, who promised to be her spirit guide. Sandy was enthralled and all too willing to believe every word the beguiling apparition told her. Marshall returned to the Clarion office and went immediately to the files he'd gathered from the investigation. But his fears were confirmed. Carmen, beautiful, slippery Carmen, had stolen every last shred of information, and the file drawer was empty. He called the hospital. Bernice had been sent home with a cracked rib and bruises. She would pull through. As for the Friday edition of the Clarion, it simply didn't exist. Commercial printers had refused to run it, and for all practical purposes, Marshall was out of business. The telephone rang. Now what?
"Marshall, this is Eldon Strawn."
"Eldon, are you all right?"
"Well, no. We just got back from a trip, and our house is a total wreck."
"We've all been hit, Eldon. They're on to us." Marshall told him everything. The hardest part was breaking the news about Ted Harmel's death.
"Marshall, we'd better run. We just better get the heck out of here and not come back."
"Run where? You've already ran once, remember? As long as you're alive, Eldon, you're going to be living with this, and they're going to know it."
"But what can any of us do?"
"You have friends, for crying out loud. What about the state attorney general?"
"I need proof, Marshall. Documentation."
Marshall looked forlornly at his empty file drawer. "I'll get you something, Eldon. One way or another, I'll get you something to show to anyone who will listen."
"Get me something solid, and I'll see what I can do. For right now, Doris and I are getting out of here."
"But where can I reach you?"
"I won't tell you over the phone. Just wait to hear from the attorney general's office. It'll mean I got through to him."
"Fine. If I'm not here, or I've ended up dead, have him talk to Al Lemley at the New York Times." With that, they said goodbye, maybe forever. Marshall locked up the office and headed for home. Bernice lay at home with an ice bag on her face when the phone rang.
"They've torn up my place!"
It was Kevin Weed, scared and high-strung.
"They must have a contract out on me."
"Be careful what you say, Kevin. The phones are bugged."
"Oh, man. I just got a call from you-know-who. You think they heard us talking?"
"I don't know. We just have to be careful."
"What am I going to do? What am I going to do? It's all going down, man. Susan says she's got the goods. It's all going down. She's going to split that place."
"Kevin, don't say another word. You better tell me in person. Where can we meet?" They made an appointment to meet at the north end of the Judd River Bridge at 7. Bernice called the Clarion. No answer. She called Marshall at home. No answer there either. Marshall heard the phone ring, but didn't answer it. He was sitting alone in his kitchen, a note from Kate in his trembling hands. She'd left him. He'd pushed her too far, neglected her just too much. She would be in touch, but for now, she was gone. Now Marshall had nothing, not even an ounce of fight. As the minutes passed, all he could do was recall her face, speak her name, and then cry.